Well, we're back, and before I lose my voice, we're going to be speaking with the travel journalist Colleen Fliedler about her article, Cove Island, The Port of Farewells. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Roy.
I hope you can hear me okay.
I can.
I've been fighting it, and my voice has been breaking up, but thank you for joining us today. And Cove Island is located in a seaside town in County Cork, along the seaside coast, sometimes referred to as the Irish Riviera. Now, I haven't heard it referred to that as before, and I found that very interesting.
I hadn't either, and they are advertising that entire coast as the Irish Riviera, and that's because apparently they have warmer breezes there and sea currents that come in that are warmer, and it's the warmest part of Ireland and certainly warmer than the rest of Great Britain. So that is, I guess there are a lot of really nice hotels and yachting activities and plenty to do if you go there.
Well, your article is really super, and it takes us back to some very, very interesting things. Why don't you just take us on a mental journey, if you will?
All right. Well, I went to Cove as a result of my interest in the Titanic and the Lusitania, and I had read that they both had this port in common in Southeast Ireland.
How fascinating is that?
Yeah, I know. So when I went there with a girlfriend, I said I have to do that and maybe bypass some of the more common touristy areas. And it's not as touristy as a lot of Ireland, and I found that delightful. And there's a lot of history there, and I'm a former historian, so that was a place that just called to me.
Now, although it's spelled C-O-B-H, you pronounce it Cove?
Yes, with a V sound. I understand in Gaelic that they don't have the letter V, but it is pronounced like we would pronounce Cove.
Cove, yeah.
And it means something like safe harbor, about what it would mean for us. And at one point it was actually called Queensland, and it gets a little, or actually Queenstown.
Right.
It gets a little confusing, but in fact when Titanic and Lusitania both sank, it was referred to as Queenstown. And that was just for a couple of decades in honor of Queen Victoria. So if you're looking for it on a map, though, do look for C-O-B-H.
Well, okay, yes. Okay. I did look it up on the web, and I did find it. And that's one of the spots where I saw the Irish Riviera, and I thought, gee, everybody's getting onto this Riviera thing. And I never thought of Ireland although I've spent a lot of time in Ireland, and I've been to... Everybody's been to County Cork for those reasons where you lose change out of your pockets by trying to kiss a stone somewhere.
Right. So we bypassed that and went on to Cove.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Right.
Now, you say that it was the port where about 2.5 million Irish left their homeland on ships bound for the United States and Canada between 1845 and 1960.
Right.
And then, of course, you mentioned the great sea disasters, the Titanic, and also the Lusitania. Let's just, if we can, you mentioned, if I may quote a little, I stood on the dock where the immigrants boarded the waiting ships those many years ago, and I gazed up the Cove steep, winding streets, a scene which had changed little over 100 years. Take us on from there.
Well, I think I am Irish, part Irish, and I did have family that actually left from there.
Could have fooled me with a name like Colleen.
Right, it was Colleen Adair was my maiden name.
Right.
And it gave me a very, a kind of an interesting feeling, knowing that this was the last time most of those people saw Ireland, and looking up and seeing the exact same thing that they would have seen all those years ago, as I say in the article. And they had to leave because of the potato famine, and it was either stay in Ireland and face certain death,
right,
because there wasn't enough food, or try something else in another country. And that's why, actually, there was a lot more than 2.5 million who left Ireland during that time, but the majority of them left through Cove and came via New York, and then some of them went up into Canada. But most people that have Irish relatives that emigrated over and came over through Ellis Island especially could trace their families back to that particular port.
I think it was particularly interesting how you pointed out that most would never see Ireland again, and thus for decades the city became synonymous with farewells.
Right. It was also called the City of Sighs by a lot of the people, and it's kind of a mixed emotion that you have there, because it is such a wonderful place, and the people are so charming, but there is this underlying history of people leaving from there,
right.
Or are the bodies being brought to shore from the Lusitania. And, I mean, it's something that obviously the people don't dwell upon. They do have displays and things like that. But nonetheless, that's their heritage.
And
a fascinating one.
And you go on, of course, to point out that their most famous immigrant was Annie Moore.
She was only 15, and I was curious about her after seeing the statue
right.
of Annie and her two little brothers, and why her parents would have left them behind. And I actually bought a book online about her. She stayed with an aunt and uncle, and when the parents had enough money, they sent for the children. So they made the sea journey by themselves, these little children. And she was one of 700 immigrants off of a ship. She was the very first immigrant to be processed at Ellis Island. So they put those dual statues up of Annie, and she represents all Irish immigrants.
And they have it at both ends.
Yes, right.
Now, then on April 1912 is when the Titanic arrived.
Right. And again, it was a very special time because of that ship. It would be like now the biggest ship in the world being launched, and there were a lot of Americans in Ireland and British that came down and vacationed, and they said, well, we might as well vacation and catch that big, beautiful new ship and take her back to New York. And so they came into Cove and stayed there and vacationed in Ireland and so forth, and then boarded the Titanic there. And that was the last port of call for Titanic before she sank. So a lot of the people that boarded in Cove were victims of that sinking.
And you go on to say that the interview with Captain Smith and the other principal officers, excuse me, I'm losing my voice here, were the last photographs taken of the Titanic.
Right, by the press that came out, and they did their news stories and so forth. And so we have the pictures that you see in books or even in the movie Titanic that they recreated. A lot of those were taken from the Irish reporters that came out to do the interviews, and some of the British that came down as well, because, as I said, that was the last port of call.
And then it was nearly a week later till word reached Cove about the Titanic sinking.
Yeah, apparently so, and I was trying to figure out how all that would have come about, but the people who put family on there swarmed back into town, and everyone just waited and waited, and then the news did come, I imagine, by telephone in those days, and they had these massive kind of memorials and so forth, knowing that their families had died, and there was nothing more they could do. It was really quite a sad time.
And almost exactly 3 years later, in May 1915, 1,100 people perished on the Lusitania.
Isn't that something? Yeah. And I saw pictures, and you will too when you visit the Cove Heritage Center. They do have pictures, and it's, again, quite sad. There were a lot of mothers with babies and that kind of thing that froze in the water. It was deep water offshore, and it is an amazing story about how people actually saw this happening.
You know, that was incredible here. It happened right before their eyes.
Absolutely. And I did go up. There is another memorial at the Old Head of Kinsale, which is about a half-hour drive from downtown Cove, and there's an old lighthouse there, and that's part of the shipping lanes, and they would come in from America, the ships, and take that route and then go into Cove. So they were skirting the coast. The captain in that case was held accountable because there had been warnings and sightings of German U-boats, their submarines, and they were at war, and the Germans had even put an ad in a New York newspaper warning passengers not to take that boat because they were going to sink anything with munitions. And, of course, Lusitania carried food and munitions and everything else. So it really wasn't a huge surprise, but it did, the sinking of that boat did bring the United States into World War One.
And in a matter of 18 minutes, Lusitania was gone.
Yep, start to finish. Two big explosions, and down she went, and not enough time to get the lifeboats in the water, and so those people died.
So then the next thing that happened, of course, is that the locals went out in every available boat that they could find to try, in the effort to rescue the survivors.
Right, right. And they did. They rescued 700-plus, thankfully. But it still, which is hard to understand, it still took too long to get to most of them. And because I think our bodies can only stand cold water for so long, especially the vulnerable ones like the children and so forth, most of them died.
From hypothermia. Yeah.
Right.
Well, now, the ones that were taken back, of course, the bodies were dealt with as one would normally, but that people actually, because there were so many, they took them into their homes.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too, and I think that it's been too many years now, but I always wanted to go over and try to interview people that remember bringing people into their homes as children and so forth, but right. Yeah, they had to bring them in. There was nothing else to do with them. They were wandering the streets. There's a story of a young girl whose family died, and she survived, a teenage girl, and she was, of course, in shock, and she wandered the streets, and finally a family took her in until they could figure out what to do with her and they get her back to some kind of relative. But the stories are just amazing that came out of that that accident.
And, of course, there are massive communal graves that were dug at the old church cemetery.
And it's very moving to go see those and know that there were so many families that perished together that there was no one to come over and claim the bodies. So they had to, you see the pictures of them, it's a big, big, long area, and they would put the caskets, these very bare bones, kind of slapped together, caskets together, and put them in there, just line them up, and then put the dirt on top.
Now, you stayed at the Commodore.
I stayed at the Commodore.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I hadn't realized at the time that would have been first class for a lot of the people that might have taken Titanic, the first class passengers. But I really enjoyed it there. It's even disregarding that, you have the beautiful views and so forth, but it is a very old hotel, lots of history, a great pub, good food, and furnished in period style. So it was quite interesting to stay in that room that the some of those people that would have boarded those ships stayed in.
And, of course, the feeling of just looking out there is, and standing in that space, which, in fact, as you say, people did stay in there.
They did, indeed. And as I say in the article, too, there were too many that had been injured in Lusitania to take them out of town, and they could only accommodate a small number in the hotels. So they did line up beds in these rooms and in all the hotels and in the homes and so forth, and they did what they could do to help people. It was really a community effort. So the people of Cove really should be and have been commended for their effort to help with those tragedies.
And today there are memorials to the victims of Lusitania.
Yes, there are. A couple of them, I believe, yeah. And then, of course, the cemetery. And, you know, if you do indeed go up, do go by the cemetery, and it's a very moving experience.
Now, yeah, you can get there, what you say, you can get there by air because it's located 20 minutes from Cork International Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And, 13 minutes by car from
right.
Cork City.
Right.
And then there's also train service.
It's not that hard to get there. It's amazing, and yet people don't seem to know about it.
It's amazing is right.
But it's not on most itineraries, as I say, and when you see the 10-day in Ireland itineraries laid out by tour operators, they don't bother to go there because it is off the main highway, and it does take a little extra time, but certainly worth the effort.
And your recommendations of where to stay?
Well, I enjoyed the Commodore immensely, but they continue to put newer hotels up and renovate older ones, and there are lots and lots of B&Bs. We did pop into the Highland B&B, which is very nearby, and the people there are just delightful. And you can also go online and rent houses and cottages and stay on farms. So there are a lot of accommodations that are unusual if you don't want the hotel experience. The Ritz hasn't come there, and the Holiday Inn is not there. It's mostly the older, typical Irish hotels that you'll find in this town.
And, of course, the one thing that everyone always asks, the food.
Well, we didn't have any problems with it. We ate a lot at the Commodore. We ate in some of the pubs, we did have pizza there, so, it was just fine. It was fine. And Jacob's Ladder is quite good. It's won a lot of awards, and, I would recommend Jacob's Ladder, a little on the more expensive side, of course, than some of the other places, but there you go.
Colleen, it's a great article, and very well written.
Thank you.
It's up on our site, and let's do this again.
Thank you so much, Roy, and I do hope you feel better.
I managed to get through this hour, so I'm sure I'm on my way to recovery. I was just afraid I was going to lose my voice in the middle of it all.
Right. You did fine.
All the best to you, Colleen, and we look forward to another segment one of these fine days, hopefully very soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye now.
Well, that was a very interesting article from Colleen, and if you go to our website at www.ttrn.com, you will find it there, and you can read it more in depth. Now, you can also check our upcoming program schedule by going to ttrn.com for the latest information, and next week we'll have Evan Agus with his cruise news again. Suzanne Wright's going to be with us on bungalows and boats in Tahiti. Stephanie Moreland is going to do Sacred Assisi, and the one and only Johnny Jett will be with us. So, until next Wednesday, this is Roy Lowy saying goodbye for now, and happy travels, and hopefully I'll be in a little bit better voice next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at ttrn.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.